Now it's time for Underground History, our monthly dig into the past that's still present. Our usual guides are back in the studio, Chelsea Rose of the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Hi, Chelsea.
Hi.
And Mark Tveskov, also based at SOU. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning.
So today, very old bones in very dry places, and how they might be able to answer some big questions about human history. Horse bones and other things discovered in the caves near Paisley, Oregon, provide clues about when people first arrived in North America and how we got here. Dennis Jenkins is a senior staff archaeologist at the University of Oregon's Museum of Natural and Cultural History. Welcome, Dennis.
Much.
Oh, we're happy to have you here. So we're talking about these caves, and they're in Lake County, Oregon, more formally known as the Paisley 5 Mile Caves. And they had been explored by archaeologists during the 1930s. Dennis, what did you already know about the Paisley Caves when your team started re-excavating them in the 2000s?
Well, we knew that Luther Cressman had gone there in the summers of 1938 through 1940, that he had in 1939, his men had excavated in cave number 3 and had found a small house, house floors surrounded by stones that around the outside of it had Pleistocene horse and camel bones, as well as bison and waterfowl and other animals, indicating a very different environment at the time of occupation. Of course, this was before radiocarbon dating, so he basically concluded that they had that the occupants had had hunted horses and camels and had butchered them and cooked them there. Some were burned, and that indicated to him that people had were the cause of the death of those animals. Other archaeologists suggested that they would like to see more evidence indicating the association of the obsidian stone tools that Cressman had found and those bones, and he could not generate that. So the debate went on for 60-some years, and in 2002, I took the field school from the University of Oregon there, and we began testing to see if Luther Cressman was correct. I hypothesized that if he was, we ought to be able to radiocarbon date some of those horse and camel bones and radiocarbon date artifacts as well to the same time period. That would indicate he was correct. If we could not do that, then perhaps the bones became associated through natural processes with those artifacts, and the two never were there at the same time, humans and those extinct animals.
So Chelsea Rose from the Southern Oregon University of Laboratory of Anthropology, what kind of questions does this raise for you, listening to Dennis's research and mission in revisiting the Paisley Caves?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a project. I've been lucky enough to know Dennis since I was an undergraduate at University of Oregon, and I've been, you know, really proud to follow this research and that it was coming from Oregon, because it's tackling fundamental, you know, questions about U.S. history, you know, North American history. And I think some of the ways that Dennis has creatively approached these and brought in all different ways to tackle these questions have been really inspiring and really important, because people often overlook the fact that archaeologists are scientists. And there's no doubt about it when you look at Dennis's research and some of the ways that he got to answer this question, because the bottom line is, if horses are there, that means at the same time as people, that means they got there before the ice-free corridor, the Clovis period. And stop me if I misspeak, Dennis. But so the fact that you have, we don't always have this kind of smoking gun to work with. So the how to prove that, you know, took a lot of effort and creative thinking, and I think some really excellent science that Dennis has been working on.
Why is it significant to find find horse bones and human bones together before what you just called the Clovis period?
Well, horses went extinct in North America about 10 or 11,000 years ago, as did camels. The horses that we have today in North America were brought in by the Spanish. So the association of camel and horse bones with humans suggests that humans and those Ice Age, those Pleistocene animals were there together.
And Dennis, when you found evidence that suggested humans and a type of horse that predates European horses were together, what was the response of the scientific community?
Well, I think they were appropriately skeptical at first. The main problem is there are very few tools easily identifiable artifacts with these. So as time has gone on, I've worked to develop the connection of some of these. Some of these these associations are incredibly tiny. For instance, we have found threads of sinew and of grass that have been stripped and then retwisted together that have been directly dated at 12,500 years. Since then, we have begun to find some of the fragments of the needles, little tiny, like 1-inch. Bone needles that are drilled through so tiny that without my glasses I can't see the hole. But those threads are 0.04 millimeters, and the first time someone brought one to me, I just could not believe that they had seen that among all of the debris that they were working in.
And Dennis, you should bring up one of the artifact types that you're most famous for.
Oh, is this the I think I know where we're going here. Might not pass the breakfast test. Yeah. And the coprolites, that's a fancy word for petrified poop, no?
Yes, that is.
What do you learn from petrified poop?
Well, we've extracted human DNA from coprolites that have been directly dated to 14,500 years. That's just an incredible amount of time for DNA to be preserved, but it's the oldest directly dated human remains in the Americas, anywhere in the Americas at this stage.
And why would excrement outlast bones or remains? Why are you finding just petrified poop?
Well, the sites are incredibly dry. When you work in there at the end of the day, your skin itches because it's being dried out. The fact is that once the coprolites dried out completely, they never got wet again. If they did, they disappear. In other words, as we get near the front of the caves, we just find like the ghost of the coprolites. And so it's back in the caves where those coprolites have dried out thoroughly, become hard like the ones in the backyard when Fido does his business, and then they just remain there. They encapsulate the DNA, and because the temperatures and moisture varied very little, the DNA has been preserved.
And 14,500-year-old coprolite, how does that compare with artifacts from Clovis sites?
Well, you just don't find coprolites in Clovis sites. They do occur occasionally in rocks, in rock shelters and caves, but very seldom, and we really don't know why that is. But Western stem points are the types of points we have here in the deserts of Oregon are much more commonly found in caves, and it's clear that that's probably the technology. I haven't demonstrated that at this stage, but recently in the horse work that we did identifying the species of horses at Paisley Caves, we radiocarbon dated a horse bone now above a western stemmed point, and that horse was 13,800 years ago. So it's starting to point at maybe western stem type points could very well be at least 14,000 years old.
And what does that indicate? Well, I do have a question on the science piece of it. I hope it doesn't get us too into the weeds here, but carbon dating can tell you how old something is, but how do you take a piece of bone and tell what kind of species it belonged to?
Well, what we did in that article was a series of measurements on the toe bones of the horses. These are preserved very well in archaeological sites because they don't have marrow in them. And so animals like, you know, cougars, bears, wolves and such don't chew on them so much. So they're very common in archaeological sites. And previously people have not been able to speciate those bones. And so what our most recent article was about was a series of measurements that we have taken and demonstrated a new method of identifying the horses.
If you're just joining us, you're hearing Dennis Jenkins. He's a senior staff archaeologist for the Museum of Natural and Cultural History at the U of O. Also with us is Chelsea Rose and Mark Tveskov of the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. You can join this discussion as well, 800-838-3760, or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Mark, what do you think about all of this research that Dennis has kind of unloaded on us here and how it changes our framing of human history?
Well, it's really sort of awe-inspiring. I mean, I've now been an archaeologist for, 25, 30 years. And the orthodoxy when I was a student was that about 11,000 years ago, Clovis people entered the New World, North America, via Beringia. And my teachers emphasized archaeology as a science, as a series of hypotheses to be tested. And that gets weighed against the egos and politics of a given situation. And like Dennis pointed out, Luther Cressman years ago suggested the possibility of these very, very ancient people in North America, but didn't have enough scientific proof to demonstrate it. And then we had the Clovis model develop after that, and that remained orthodoxy for a long time. And it took, like Dennis framed it, posing new hypotheses and going out and collecting new information. So to me, it's sort of inspiring to see the scientific method work and play out and just propose the next idea that now is itself subject to testing and revision over time.
And does the next idea automatically chuck out the last idea? Does this disprove?
Well, there's some complexity to that, but the Clovis culture was a real thing. It's a really interesting thing. It's just not the oldest thing anymore. And now we just have to think about how that fits into the new information.
And Dennis, have you experienced, the way you put it there, Mark, facts being weighed against egos? have you experienced pushback on your work that was about more than scientific rigor?
Not anywhere near as much as people like James Ottavasio at Meadowcroft and Tom Dillehay down in Chile at Monte Verde site. And I'm really grateful for that. but possibly it's also the fact that I brought in, just a really long list of specialists to work with me. And we have tried to be objective about it, when we've been challenged, we have taken those people seriously and respectfully and gone to try to, calculate how we could test to see if they were correct, their ideas about where the DNA came from, and whether or not the DNA was as old as the coprolites they were found in. So, yes, I have to deal with, with pushback and with egos. I mean, in this particular arena, we are heavily invested personally. It's your career. It's your basically your honor in some cases. And as long as everybody can remain objective and attempt to develop new lines of research, then it is not quite so personal. But when you're spending sick leave and vacation time and your own cash to advance your research, you have to be invested, and it becomes a very personal thing.
It sounds like you are. We have a caller on the line with a specific question about your research. Mark from Grants Pass, welcome to the Exchange.
Thanks. A shout out to Mark and Chelsea. This is Mark from I Did the Digs with you guys. at Jump Off Joe in Fort Lane. My question has to do with the are we able to extract from the coprolites any isotope signatures that tell us what the dietary preferences were of the people that resided there?
All right. Thank you, Mark. Very informed question.
Yeah, that's a great question. We have not done isotope analysis. I know a lot of people are anxious about the coprolites and ask why we haven't done certain kinds of analyses. And the truth is that I work very closely with Eske Vilerslav in Copenhagen, and so these coprolites go from my lab to Copenhagen, and they are, you know, kept frozen there to keep them in a stable condition. And consequently, it's not like they just move back and forth between our two labs easily.
Right, they're very delicate things, I would imagine.
Yes,
of course.
And to remind people, coprolites are petrified poop, possibly 14,000 years old. And if they get wet, that's it, right? You're done.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. it. And if once they're processed for DNA through chemicals and stuff that release the DNA, they're not useful for a lot of other types. So in many cases, I have to sort out, you know, what kinds of analyses are going to be done by which lab. And so just recently we have moved into pollen and looking at parasites that people were carrying. One of the interesting ones is hookworm.
People had hookworms back then.
Wow.
A tropical and subtropical parasite. So how did it get here? How did it pass through, what's been identified, as the, as the frozen, filter, if you will? Clearly, it doesn't belong, or we don't think of it being in Oregon, and yet we have them dated at least as far back as 12,800 years.
So some implications there about the climate revealed by petrified poop. I just love that term. Can't get enough of it. I want to thank our resident archaeologist. The time goes by so quick every month here on Underground History, but we look forward to it. Chelsea Rose, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Mark Tveskov, thank you.
Thank you.
And Dennis Jenkins from the University of Oregon Museum of Natural and Cultural History, a staff archaeologist there. Thank you so much for your time today.
And your dedication to science, touching all that stuff.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Chelsea.